The following is a presentation of the Tragically Hip podcast series.
Welcome to the Tragically Hip on Shuffle live stream. This is the show where we as hip fans get together because my shuffle machine has assembled us. Last week we rolled the die and we landed on looking for a place to happen. We've had a week to think about it, and now we reunite round the table with a brand new panel to discuss, dissect, and I forget the third one. Alliteration, friends. Alliteration. But at any rate, we've got a really great one tonight. And of course, as always, the Tragically Hip on Shuffle live stream is brought to you by three folding chairs, a compass pointing inward, and someone's cunty brother-in-law. So there's that. Tonight, I'm really excited to welcome Dave. Holy geez, sorry. Tonight, I'm really excited to welcome Dave from Montreal, Greg from Tacoma, and Chris from Seattle. Tonight, we've asked the group their favorite last song on an album. I'm totally on a teleprompter. This is terrible. I hate this. Last song on an album from the band's discography. See, if I was just saying that, I wouldn't have fucked that up. But I'm reading it. Ugh. I'm becoming everything that I hate. If you're in the live chat, let me know what the hell is going on. We welcome you, and we celebrate you, and we hope that you're here. So there is that. Let's meet our panelists. There we are. We're all together now. How the hell is it going on this hip-tastic day, Greg?
It's awesome, JD. It was sunny in Tacoma and Seattle yesterday, and today we're back to the clouds.
Now, when does that go away? Like, where you're out of the woods?
If you're ever going to make a plan to go to the Pacific Northwest, USA, come between July 15th and October 15th. That's when you'll see something that you'll resemble. We get 59 blue sky days in this area. We get fewer blue sky days than any metropolitan area in the U.S.
Wow.
And the key thing is, you know somebody's from here because we don't have hair under our arms. We have moss. So there you go.
Follow that, Dave from Montreal. Well, how's it going, man?
All that West Coast gray sky might explain all the grunge. I don't know. But another wonderful day in Montreal. Go Habs, go. I think I kind of see the game in the poster behind me if I squint a little bit.
you'll have to give us updates.
I will do my best, too. I know that the Habs are a beloved team for at least some of the hip. And that's Paul Langlois's team. And I'm thrilled to be here with you guys. JD, it's been a long time. First time caller, long time listener. And how cool to be of West Coast, US-based hip fans that strut along that border and remind us that as much as we want to wrap them in a flag sometimes, it's almost more about geography than boundaries.
Yeah. You got me. Okay.
Well, when I think about the Americans that I know that love the hip, they're in Burlington, Vermont, and they're in Buffalo, New York, and they're in Detroit, Michigan, and tonight they're in Seattle and Tacoma.
Seattle,
of course.
That just says to me that if we'd settled the boundary somewhere else, then there might be more hip fans.
We'd be okay with that right now.
There's still time. 54-40 or fight, you know?
Yeah. Please invade. No. Please.
Chris from Seattle, how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going great. I'm really happy to be on this podcast, which I really love, and really glad to be here with Greg, whom I've been close friends with since we were teenagers, and God knows
how much time. Hey, you didn't tell us that before.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know how much time we've spent watching the Hip live, listening to Hip, talking about the Hip, and talking about the Hip. But we are definitely like the hardcore representatives of the U.S.'s deeply cultish Hip fans, and we're here to represent for ourselves and for a lot of our friends and musician friends who are longtime fanatics about this great band, and pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're here. I got a secret to tell you three. You can clearly tell so far how many times I've bumbled. There's no show without the guests. So you guys do all the heavy lifting here. You know, I just sit back and mess everything up. Let's go to the tail of the tape. The song we're going to be discussing tonight is Looking for a Place to Happen. It falls as the second track on Fully, Completely, which came out in 1992. And who wants to say who it was produced by? Because I cannot say his last name.
Is that Chris Sangaritis?
Chris Sangaritis. You got it, buddy. You did it on the first try. Nicely done.
I'm glad you walked into that propeller for me, Greg. Thank you.
Now, if you happen to listen to the Tragically Hip Top 40 Countdown last year, this one did crack the top 40. It landed at number 35. But when you consider 169 tracks were represented, I think 35 is pretty darn respectable for this song. A song that wasn't a single and wasn't a deep cut, but it wasn't a single either. I've got in my records that the first live performance of this was back in 1991, and they put this one to bed in 2015, October 15th. So there's that. Let's give this song a listen. This is a live version that comes from Halifax, I believe, in 2011, I want to say. I didn't write that down, folks. That's my memory talking. Okay, here we go. This is Looking for a Place to Happen. Our song that we are shuffling this week. God damn it.
Explore, follow every little web.
That's pretty wild, huh? That was a pretty wild outro.
So, JD, I will tell you, I watched that video on YouTube earlier today. It's from that 2015 tour, the Fully and Completely tour.
Oh, okay, perfect. But do you know if that was a Halifax show?
It was a Halifax show, yeah.
Yes, I was half right.
And were you all getting a ton of echo with it, or is that just me?
Yeah.
Okay. So if it sounded good and clear to you, that's awesome. I watched that video yesterday as well, but when it was coming through here just a moment ago, I was getting a bunch of echo. So just me. That's good.
So what do you guys think of that? The outro is so wild in that. Any thoughts at all, gentlemen?
There's a couple other videos of them doing that same where Sinclair is coming in and singing and then Gord singing that part. I don't think I've ever seen it live that way, but if they've done it other places, it's real cool.
We kind of got the dual lead vocal thing happening there.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I have vague memories of old bootlegs where Downey's singing that plaintive wail at the end of the song. And it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It really adds something to it. It's a shame that didn't make the record if that was in demo.
Yeah.
I feel like that song fades. So maybe it didn't make it. And we just never heard it because we all know that fades go on forever.
There you go. So, can I jump in real quick, JD, with a compliment for you?
Sure. I hate compliments.
Okay, I'll make it a question. And the question is when do you sleep? Because in addition to this podcast, you said something about 8 podcasts, and I think that's it's just a lot. And to do the theater thing as you're doing this, as you've been doing reissues of the old ones, it's just a lot. And I just want to thank you and congratulate you because it's provided a lot of comfort and learning and curiosity since the boys stopped playing 10 years ago. But I just, 8 podcasts in 10 years is crazy. And the theater one is fantastic. So you're, it's a big effort. And I just want to say, when do you sleep?
I woke up from a nap about an hour ago.
So yeah, okay, good.
Well, let's crack this nut and go.
But do you still want our intro, JD, our icebreaker, or whatever you called it?
Goodness gracious. I stayed away from the teleprompter after my intro. So, I definitely want that.
Can I call
We'll start with you, Dave.
Thank you. I'm going to take Emperor Penguin.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
So everybody's in on it.
I just
want to let everybody know what it exactly is you're choosing. And that is the last, your favorite right now, last song that appears on a record. And Dave came in with Emperor Penguin and then I cut him off. So I apologize.
Well, that's okay. It's a really special song. And this is a band that is filled with, they have given us so many great final songs on albums. It's a thing they've always done well, really well. And I could probably have this same argument for El Dorado or for Gems. My buddy Paul would be yelling in my ear, Country Day, Country Day. But Emperor Penguin, from the second I heard it, walking up St. Laurent Boulevard after buying a tape of Phantom Power at Sam the Record Man at midnight, the night the album came out, that song has just been like my everything. The way that you hear in the final guitar solo, if you turn it up loud enough, much like Gimme Shelter, you can hear someone in the background going, woo, as the guitar solo hits the crescendo. That song is beautiful and brilliant and speaks to me in so many different ways. And I love it. And I only ever heard it live once.
Oh, I've got to ask when that was.
We Are the Same tour, Quebec City, at this beautiful old theater right by the Saint Jean gates. And gun to my head, my favorite place to see the Tragically Hip was Quebec City, always. It was just a very special place. The fans were smaller, but mighty. And second to last show I saw before the final tour, when it was still normal and not filled with all kinds of weird emotions, was in Quebec, Parc de la Francophonie, during the Festival d'été de Quebec. And that was a brilliant show, just a brilliant show. I would have heard them play for a place to happen there, because they did the full album.
Right.
So, yeah, that was
a great tour.
Warm, fuzzy memories surrounding that night.
Chris, what is your last favorite song?
I'm going to use visual song. Props here, because I dug out my original vinyl copy of this today. Sorry. Yeah. I love this record. It happened to be recorded in Michigan, near where I grew up. I didn't move to Seattle until I was 19. This was recorded at Cobo Hall. And it's such a lovely combination of like American fanatical hip fans and Canadian fans just coming over from like Windsor. So I grew up like you could throw a rock and pretty much hit Windsor. So I love this record. And The Wherewithal is a track that I just love to death. Anyway, I think it's like one of their great pot boilers. But this version on this record, it's just like, it still makes the hair stand up on my arms. It's like, it's just incredibly intense. And the way they end it, the way they come out of it, it's like they're in this, it's like they're in this truck that's going like 100 miles an hour, and they're woo, and it's got this incredible momentum, and they're just trying to bring it in for a landing, you know, and to mix metaphors. And it's just incredible. And I think, you know, you talk about like looking for a place to happen, the live version, like they're doing this stuff that they don't do on the record because they faded it out, and they're taking this song to a whole other place. But I think that's what's great about the Tragically Hip, is that their songs had a lot of headroom. They could be completely fantastic on records, and then you'd see them live and you would watch the almost like the evolution of songs. Like there was room for it to grow or for them to interpret it. And I just think that's not only one of the greatest live album closers of all time for any band, it just shows like how much headroom was left in that song like 4 or 5 years after it was released, you know, I guess. Yeah, somewhere in there.
Can you imagine
I just love it.
Can you imagine leaving the arena that night after, like, that's your closing song? You would be fucking pogo sticking out of there. You would just be so riled up.
Point of order. I don't think that was the last song that night.
I don't think it was either on the actual set list.
I think that was left off of that, and they've re-released it since on one of their releases while the band was still touring. They released it in single from Cobo 96.
Which song, Dave?
I believe it's Locked in the Trunk of a Car.
Oh, cool.
That'd be a hell of a closer.
Yeah. I think they left two songs off of Live Between Us. Mm-hmm. The other one might have been Let's Stay Engaged.
Okay,
that's crazy that wasn't the end of the set.
What's the date, guys? It was 95, right? 97.
Came out in 98, but the show was, hang on. Looking here, let's see if it's in there.
Sorry, folks. This is riveting podcasting, I know, but we've got to get to the bottom of this.
I can put the hockey game on for you if you want.
Just tell us what the score is.
3-1 Sabres.
No, sorry.
I think the show was in 96. Yeah, it was the November-December tour of 96, it says, in the liner notes. And the album came out in 98. And,
Cobo Hall. All right, compare it to your record. Grace 2 opens the show, followed by Fully Completely.
Yep.
Followed by Springtime.
Yep.
Followed by Twist My Arm.
song about the Lions of Detroit.
Gift Shop.
Yep.
Head by Century.
Check.
The Luxury.
Affirmative.
700-foot ceiling.
Nope. Courage.
Nope.
Okay, Courage is after 700-foot ceiling. Then Daredevil.
Nope. New Orleans is sinking.
Ooh. No, then so for real, it goes Courage, Daredevil, Flamenco, Escape is at Hand for the Traveling Man, New Orleans is sinking.
Song. Oh my God.
Don't Wake Daddy.
Yeah.
Love it.
There's more. Scared, Blow It High Dough, Nautical, The Wherewithal.
Yep.
And then first encore, Thugs, Every Time You Go, Fire in the Hole. Second encore, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, Little Boat.
Holy shit.
That's a monster. My guess is they didn't want to release a double record.
That was my guess. This is a double, though. That's the thing, man. It should have been a triple. Yeah, it's a double. Look at that.
I would have loved to have heard that Every Time You Go.
Holy shit. That's a great set.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, great set. Okay, well, great closing track for the album, even if it was like, you know, six songs from the end of the show.
No, but by dint of the rules, you were well within your, you had the wherewithal to choose the wherewithal as well.
Nice.
All right, Greg, what is your favorite last track?
Well, I will just represent the Northwest. I have to and say Goodnight Josephine. Because that was recorded in sunny Seattle, Washington, where the boys described wanting to poke their eyes out with a pin or something because they were so bored in the rain in the, you know, the Seattle weather. But, yeah, that is one of my favorite records, and that is one of my very favorite last songs.
Good pick, man.
That's a beautiful song. It's so great.
Dave didn't hear me say it last time, but I live about a mile or two, or let's say 5 miles from the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, which is mentioned in Vaccination Star. You got it.
Oh, wow. Well, no, Josephine is such a beautiful song.
I agree.
Few songs that manages to sing about a cell phone and still be beautiful.
That's right. Nokia made me cry. Exactly.
Let's get into this. We're talking about looking for a place to happen. Off the top, what do you recall about the first time you heard this song? Or do you have strong memories of that? Chris, we'll start with you.
I can't honestly say that I have a distinct memory of the first time I heard this song. But I certainly remember the first time I heard this record, which was pretty much right when it came out, and just being completely, completely blown away by the entire record. And so that was a long time ago, obviously. So it would be a lie for me to say, like, I remember exactly what I thought about the song, but I think I have the gist of it. And I want to be careful how I say this, because I feel like this whole album is a collection of some of the most amazingly brilliant songwriting. I mean, it is just great song after great song after great song. It just from beginning to end. And there's certain hip albums that honestly kind of grew on me over time, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that's actually a great thing about the band. But this album just hit me right in the face.
It's like a
right
tsunami. And,
yeah, exactly. And so for me, this song, and again, I want to be careful how I say this because I'm not disrespecting this song in any way. This for me is not in the upper echelon of my favorite songs on this record, but that's only because they're such great songs. And I'm going to just quickly jump into like the deep end of the nerd out pool. I'm just going to flat out nerd out and say that for me, this song is like a great utility player on a championship team. Right. And it's completely integral to the milieu. I'm sorry. I'm going to mispronounce French for a Canadian audience. So to me, this album is like the great Canadian travelogue, and the landscapes of this travelogue are interior. You know, whether it's like the inside of a mind of a serial killer and locked in a trunk of a car, or a prisoner, or you know, Gord looking out the window, and it's this exterior, you know, travelogue of Canada, and, you know, the Ferris wheel off rusting in the distance, you know, and things like that. So, and I love how it's kind of going interior, exterior, and blending. And to me, this song is completely part of that, is a completely important part of that story and that bigger picture, waiting for a place to happen. And I'm going to shut up here, but I know Greg and I have, I don't think they're like differing takes on exploration for this. They're just like a lot of great Tragically Hip songs. They're happening on a lot of different levels, and they leave mm-hmm. room. I think one of the great things about Gord as a songwriter and a lyricist is that he leaves room for your life and your experiences to enter the picture. His songs are not a locked door. So, you know, there's times where I thought I knew exactly what a Tragically Hip song is about, and it, you know, maybe it, he was, you found out that he was thinking about something else. But the fact that they work on so many layers is important, and the layer of exploration and my view of what that the song is about in that regard is something I want to talk about at some point here. And I know Greg does too. We have not conflicting visions of what that means, but just, you know, I think it's different sets of things that are both true about the song. Or maybe Gord would come here and say, "You're both wrong," and, you know, I was talking about something else entirely. But I don't think he minded other people interpreting his songs with their own experience.
That's correct. No,
of course.
That's encouraged.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference between a poet and an ad copywriter, you know.
What do you think, Dave? What was your first experience, your first go around with this one?
I mean, I would have been 11 years old when
wow.
And I have this wonderful recall where I can remember buying every Hip album in the same way that I can remember watching where I saw some of the great movies of my youth, and why I include JFK at the Cinema 5 Theater on Sherbrooke and Girouard, I don't know, but that's in there for me. right around, that was 91 also, so that would have been the same time that Fully Completely came out. It's a song that meant a lot more to me then than it does now. When I was a kid, hearing Jacques Cartier write This Way, mm-hmm. as a kid learning about Canadian history, this was such an open invitation for, like, hey, we're your new favorite band. Jump on in. We're going to
see.
And I'm with Chris. As I've gotten older, I've strayed from that. Can you imagine the burden of a song that's in between Courage and At the 100th Meridian?
Right.
Yes.
The burden. I love it.
And part of me thinks that this would actually be maybe a more fitting opener on Fully Completely. Mm-hmm. There's something very Stonesy about that mm-hmm. little riff of Bobby Baker that it's not quite Start Me Up in the way that Poets is, but there's mm-hmm. something there to this song that really sounds. This is where you guys are musicians and you can be like, yeah, they're playing in the open G chord like the Stones do. That's not my real. But I hear it now when I hear a Stone song. Mm-hmm. The lyrics are fun. And like I said, they spoke to me then. It's eclipsed by almost every other song on this album. And I'm curious, JD, it hit number 35 on your on the top 40. How many songs from Fully Completely were on the in that were below it? 35 and one.
Oh, great question. Hold on for 1 second. You guys can.
Yeah, well, I mean, Greg, this is what this album runs into. This is Bob Mercereau's 100 Greatest Canadian Albums of All Time that came out 20 years ago, so it probably needs a refresh. Mm-hmm. It was number 5.
Yeah.
The highest ranking Hip album. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could argue Will Go 2 might be with Looking for a Place to Happen. But I like both those songs, and I'm not meaning to disparage them, and I'm running into what Chris ran into.
Yeah.
I mean, but what a wonderful blessing to have.
Whatever
the fans collectively decided was the 35th best song was like the 11th best song on that album.
Seven songs are seven. Above it.
Wow.
Seven, yeah, are above that.
Courage was
number 10. Looking for a Place to Happen was 35. 100th Meridian was 15. Pigeon Camera was 29. Lion Eyes was 92. Locked in the Drunk of a Car was number 8. Will Go 2 was 154. Fully Completely was 13. Yeah. Wheat Kings was 17. 50 Mission Cap was 20. Oh, man, The Wherewithal, 139. And El Dorado, 44. So there you have it.
El Dorado, man. Yeah, that's awesome.
Crazy. Yeah.
So I'm gonna. I'll go. Dave, are you? Are you in a good pausing spot?
Oh yeah. Please jump in.
Okay. So I'm gonna take JD's question a little differently, which is just that first reaction to it. I was very fortunate to hear the Hip on the radio in '89. A lot of people didn't hear it or didn't pay attention the same way it caught my ear. Then I was very fortunate to see them in 91 in Seattle in the spring. And apparently they came at least one other time before that, I think to the Moor in like 1990. And I didn't know it. I somehow missed the first show in Seattle that I've heard about. The second show in Seattle that I've heard about was spring of 1991. And it was at a place called the Off Ramp, where my band has played and Livesey's band's probably played. I swear to God, there were 40 people. And so did all the Canadians miss the fact that they were there opening for the Sundays? I don't know how this happened, but there were not the hockey sweaters. Sorry, I almost said the J word. The hockey sweaters were not in evidence that night as they were in all the other shows we ever saw, but it just wasn't the same experience later. So here's the greatest band in the world on a tiny little stage with a pole down the middle of it and a bare light bulb hanging over the stage. And I'm there with Tommy and Livesey and I are all in bands together. And these guys are thrashing away. And I'm like, this is like a stadium act in a tiny club where they serve breakfast the next morning, the hash after the bash. So like, what is going on? And I still have, sweat from Gord, from all of them all over me. Right. Okay. So that's the first time I ever see them. And the reason I'm telling this story right now is because this song starts with, I've got a job I explore. So that night in 91, right before a year before this record comes out, Gord Downie steps to the mic and he says, I had a job before this. I had a job before this that, he goes into the thing that is the famous killer whale tank beginning, but it was not the killer whale tank story. And so for all the Hip people that watch these or listen to these podcasts, I want to know, did you see them in 91 and did he do what he did in Seattle that night, which was say, I had a job before this. I was a frogman for the cops.
Oh, I've heard that.
So Marge and Doug are out driving around and they're going to take a shortcut across the lake, but they haven't paid attention to the weather that week and the ice is thin. And so Downey has to go as a frogman and fish them out later, or whatever. I was a frogman for the cops. So I bet you there were 10 different stories like that. But the one that we know is the killer whale tank one, which is awesome. But I swear to God, the frogman for the cops one was even better. Right. So I'll start there and then I'll shut it.
Oh, JD, can I jump in for a second?
Gives
me memories of bootlegs from, I used to go on class trips to Toronto and there was a store across the street for Much Music, not on Queen, but on John. We'd go up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
That's where I got all my bootlegs when I was a kid. And I have not the Frogman for the cops, but the one that I've has stuck with me forever and I haven't been able to find since 1990 something was he was a porter on a steamship line.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like I'm Spartacus in the third person. And I think there's a few of those times. It's fucking amazing. These bags on a cruise ship. Like these are all things that were workshopped over the years and whoever caught the lightning in the bottle of taping that double suicide and then a Toronto radio station ran with it forever and that went around and someone taped it and then sold it to me for $20 at that store across from Speakers Corner.
Absolutely. Nice. I did the same thing because I had to have it on cassette. Had to.
Yeah.
And I could never, I could never find it on the radio. I found, Double Suicide once they were playing it. And I remember mixing it. I remember because I hit record right as he says, in the live version, he says, because I throw like a girl. If I throw enough rocks, I might break through. And I hit record right as he says that. So I literally had to, I recorded the beginning of the song and then dubbed in that part. So I still had the whole, so I had the whole song. Such a nerd.
Podcasts on the Tragically Hip.
if I could interject, and I don't want to go too far off the song because I know we're probably still wanting to explore that a little bit more, but I think one of the great, great things about Gord Downie was just his gift as an improviser, like a shaggy dog storyteller, or just a guy who was going to make you listen. And it was like, wow, what's he saying there? But also just like visually. And I know he had some of his like sort of standard stage moves, but I just remember, I think I've seen The Hip 9 times, so nothing compared to you guys, I'm sure. But every time there was, I mean, he was the definition of charisma to me, not because he was the best looking guy or wore fancy stage clothes, because you could not stop looking at him and wondering, what's he going to do next? And he just was like, his interpretive dancing of like what he was talking about, and like swimming on the monitors, or you know, sitting back on the mic stand and balancing himself in the air while seated, like he was driving a race car. I mean, just one thing after another. And I'm sure there's, I definitely saw him do the same move.
Washing somebody's hair.
Yeah, but I never saw a show where he didn't just spontaneously do something I'd never seen him do before. Like, he was one of the world's great improvisers, like lyrically, vocally, but also visually. I mean, just a brilliant dude, obviously.
You're making me so happy, guys.
Yeah.
This is why the people... This is why the people who suggest that the music shouldn't be part of a musical are wrong. I mean, you just basically laid out the three components of a musical, you know, and it was, you know, that's what they did. That's what Gord did. So
he was a great theatrical personality. Absolutely. And I don't mean in any way that there was artifice around that. There was a lot of, you know, illusion and, you know, watch this, but he was an incredibly honest performer and lyricist and dude, you know, and he was also just one of the great theatrical personalities, period. But and certainly the music.
The one thing that separates him from the Broadway actor, or even from the Mick Jagger, is the eye contact.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
One of us right into his world, and that is almost indescribable to somebody who's foreign. Doesn't, I don't mean foreign like from somewhere else, as we can see by being to Americans, but foreign to the Hip or to a rock show and to the spectacle of it all.
Yeah.
The difference between being at a show and being in a show. And Gord brought us to the show every single night. And I miss that terribly. I miss that.
Yeah. Totally. Because you always felt that he was one of those performers who was never doing it by rote, that he was always in the moment, right there, in the second, responding to what was happening, causing things to happen. But you never sensed that he was thinking about the grocery list while playing, you know, Jumpin' Jack Flash for the 4,000th time. And I love the Stones. I'm not dissing the Stones. But you know, he was one of the most present, in-the-moment dudes ever, as far as running rock.
And by dint of that, the band was, because they had to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, like, and suddenly you get this ebb and flow between, you know, the band driving his narrative, and him driving the band's jam. You know, and the interplay that comes with that is a beautiful thing. You just cannot imagine another band doing that. You know,
on this song. So just to get back, like, to the sometimes you talk about the lyric side and the music side, and the other quick lyric thing. The road Livesey went down about, you know, being on tour of Canada, and also the interior, you know, travel log. It's a great description. All the other stuff in the lyrics about Jacques Cartier, and I had no idea. I knew a little bit of the story, but I didn't know that was the guy who misheard the word Canada and accidentally named a nation, right? Borrowing from other nations that may have already been there since. God, who knows? You know, like time immemorial type God, who knows? Or maybe people who've been there since God. Who knows? Right. So you can look at that, even that one little line, you can look at twice. So, and then I went down the rat hole because they did another roadside attraction with a band called Crash Vegas, which I'd never heard of. One of the things they did was cover Neil Young doing Pocahontas. So then I read about Pocahontas, and apparently, he's Neil is channeling, I'm going to forget the poet's name right now, but I went down the whole thing of this bridge poem that inspired Neil Young to write about Pocahontas. And so you can go down some super long things, but for me, it was just like, here's Gord in 92 invoking First Nations people and all the stuff that he's going to do at the end of his career and the end of his life. So there's a ton, there's a ton of lyrical subtext in, hey, we're at a party, just, you know, hey, let me take your coat. Oh, you know, put that up on the bed. Hey, you got the real bum's eye for clothes. So the bum's eye for clothes sounds like a saying that Canadian people say. Like my mom said hard done by one time, and I was like, Mom, where'd you hear that? Right. So like bum's eye for clothes sounded like one. Stepping on bags of shit sounds like more than just what we think of as pranks teenagers play, right? I think there's something more to that. I don't know what. But musically, going back to JD, he said, super fast talker is going to slow down a minute. Robbie and Gord on this song, like Chris Tsangaritis does all these heavy metal records. And so this is kind of the most heavy metal that the Hip ever really go in some ways. There's a ton of riffs. It's a very guitar record where Day for Night is a very bass Sinclair type record, you know, just who are the featured artists. So there is, you know, Sinclair Paul and Robbie are all over this record in a huge way. But the way that Robbie Baker leaves room for Gord Downie, back to your earlier point about being present. Yeah. You know, there's so much listening in what he does, but he also, every time Gord does something, Robbie comes up with these complimentary riffs that make it sound like a conversation between the vocalist and the guitarist. And so this particular song, when I listened to that again, I was like, oh man, Robbie is just listening to him and responding. Sorry about the long-winded answer. There you go.
Brilliant. That's great. That's great.
This is a four-hour show, right, JD?
That makes me appreciate the song that much more, though. Like, thank you for that. That comes at it from a place that perhaps my ear doesn't know how to listen for. And that's really cool.
Can I say, because Greg and I had a long conversation, we were like, we can't talk too much about what we're going to say because we just want to surprise each other and be spontaneous. But we were talking about exploration, and Greg was really talking about, you know, the connection with Indigenous peoples and original exploration. Oop, Greg, you've disappeared. At least your picture has. And I also think that another layer that this is working at, and maybe I'm just hearing this as a musician and as a musician who's toured, I think it's totally working as a story about a man who is becoming a great songwriter and a band that's becoming a great touring band, is a great touring band. You know, I got a job, I explore, I follow every little whiff. I want my life to smell like this. Well, there's a lot of very smelly situations on the road, but you know, it's like you do it because you want to go out there, you're exploring. So you're literally exploring the landscapes and looking for these places to happen. But again, in this interior and exterior world of this record, I think he's exploring the interior landscape of, I'm becoming a songwriter. I'm becoming a guy who's exploring his subconscious or his feelings or his impressions or, you know, what else. And I think the line, there's another line where he says, come on in, sit right down. You're not the first to show. That could certainly apply to the, you know, the initial settlers and stuff. You're not the first to show. We've been here since God knows when. But it also works for bands, like, you know, by the time the audience gets there, you know, you've shown up hours before, you've done a sound check, you're sitting around waiting for people to show up, you're sitting around waiting for things to happen. It's like, we've been here since God knows when. I'd like, come on in, like, great. You know, you're hoping the audience will show up. And this could just be me, you know, projecting on this song. But I think Gord was never a guy who was working at just one level. I mean, I think there's some songs that are working like four, five, six levels, right? And then again, somehow all still leaving room for your experiences as a listener, which I think is very generous of him. And quickly, I would just say, I was also thinking about the song Putting Down, which I love, where he kind of makes this connection. He goes like, you know, to document the indigenous, to paint and sketch, to paint and sketch. I mean, he's kind of morphing that sort of indigenous Canada with like me as the observer documenting what I'm seeing indigenously, which can, that umbrella can come under, you know, there's a lot that's indigenous in Canada.
Obviously. So I know who, so I know who murdered me. Exactly.
Yeah. And then I'm like, well, okay, right.
So JP has the pennant hanging behind him. I will say that Putting Down has always sounded to me like a Pearl Jam song. Always.
There's something about
that song that sounds like a little bit more up-tempo, better man with the guitar solo at the end.
I guess I can see that.
For sure.
I'd
be shocked if whatever indigenous references we hear in this song was a foreshadowing of what happened 30 years later, 25 years later. I'd be shocked. It was honestly, it was so far off of our radar at the time. As I mean, I remember learning about the residential school system after I graduated from high school, and learning that the residential school system was fully in effect when Trouble at the Hen House came out.
Which is insane. This is
a big national shame that that carried on for such a long time. And there's nothing explicit about it to me. It's very, if anything, that's implicit. You know, let us dive in, and he's not here to tell us.
Right.
I don't think he would anyway. But I would be really floored. That would be like, if we could find the provenance of that, I'd be blown away.
Yeah.
But what we need is access to the notebook.
There you go.
We know he used the four color pens. Yes.
Right.
And you know, when Chris was talking about working on multiple levels, there's a part of it that is like through the book, the documentary book, the coffee table book, you can see some of his notes, and they are in green, red, black, blue. And
one color,
obviously we don't have the cipher. That's the only problem.
Yeah.
Like we need the Rosetta Stone of Gord's pen.
I saw him pull out that notebook a couple of times and pull out that pen and jot down a note. And then just sat around going, did the thing I just said maybe make it into a future? And never nothing.
Nah.
But,
that was always a real goosebump moment to see the notes, smallest come out. Was always a very
Gosh.
Well, we never got to meet him, but we saw him a bunch of times. And then Dave, I want to make sure we get a chance to hear your deeper thoughts about the song. I will just say that just because how old we are, I was born in 63 and somebody on the screen might be older than me. These guys were always like our little brothers. And, you know, we started playing in 1980 or whatever. They started in 84. We saw him at the end of the 80s. But just like to be on the same screen as somebody who actually met these people, that's awesome and amazing. Another opportunity. Thank you, guys.
On my mantle, I will show you the my favorite picture of all time.
Oh, that was awesome.
From that night in Quebec City, We Are the Same show where I heard Emperor Penguin.
That's beautiful.
And the show ended, and small theater. Johnny walked over to me from the stage and went, "Come meet us at the restaurant next door in an hour."
What?
So I walk into the restaurant later, and I sit down at the bar, and I send a bottle of wine to their table. And then from across the restaurant, Gord goes, "Dave, will you join us?"
Nice.
And and that was a real formative moment for me. That was incredibly validating moment for me.
That's pretty great.
Absolutely. Showed me. And again, a totally different place. Like you said, they were kids to you, or at least, you know, I imagine same age, right?
Yeah.
But if you were musicians and going before 84, then I could see how the relationship would be different. Whereas for me, it was like I turned on Much Music and I mean, I was raised on the Stones. My mom took me to see the Stones when I was 9 years old. And that set the tone for me. Right. I've seen the Rolling Stones in every decade of my life, and might get to see them again. They have a new album out. when the hip reached me through Much Music, it was like, oh fuck, this is for me. And things like Jacques Cartier, Right This Way, like I said, that was them telling me to come on in and sit right down. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the first to show. I was late. I wasn't allowed to go to the other attraction. I begged my parents. And as part of my research for tonight's program, I went back and watched Hex and Kettle. And it's amazing because it's before I really got in head first, feet first, everything. And it's so cool to see them in their late 20s, these wide-eyed kids who have already these absolute classics under their belt that will continue to motivate us and inspire us long after the band continues to play them. And for me, even going back now, looking for a place to happen isn't quite at the level of some of the other earlier stuff, but there's something in that story and there's something to it that shows you where he's heading as a songwriter. And I think the band right in there, you nailed it with the way that Bobby Baker is able to speak to the lyrics and create different things with the guitar for it. This song doesn't show the best of Johnny Faye, I don't think. I think that there isn't really like a moment in there where he's given a spotlight. The bass doesn't really jump out at me. It's that same tone of guitar as Unlocked in the Trunk of a Car, but it's not, but not as much. It's so weird to be sitting here and thinking about my favorite band and all my favorite songs. And like, obviously there's going to be songs that aren't your favorites. There are thousands of Tragically Hip fans who say this is the 35th best song of all time.
And they're right.
You know, the fact that Sharks isn't in their top 35, like, not for them. Right. It is for me.
Right. Yeah, right.
One of many great things about them, I think, is that just how, you know, they grow with you, or you grow with them, or you grow into songs. You might outgrow some songs, but you grow into other songs, like Throwing Off Glass, which you were featuring last week. When I first heard that, I was like, beautiful song, cool song, great sonic atmosphere. When I first heard it, I was just married. And then after, when my now fairly grown-up daughters were little, I heard that song really for the first time. It's like the moment when, you know, a daughter realizes that there's, you know, scary, evil shit in the world, and that loss of innocence that you're trying to defend as a parent. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, it made me cry. And it was like, that was years after it came out, right? And so that's one of the great things about the band, is like, you can, as your life experience grows and changes, there's something for you there, everywhere. That's why I can do podcasts about it for 8 years, JD, and why people can come on and talk about these guys seriously for hours on end, because there's so much there.
Couldn't agree more. And we only really scratched surface. I like, though, that we got into some generic hip chat. Not generic, but you know what I mean, generally speaking.
That I thought about while you mentioned the Notebook. Garbage Bag Trees.
Right. Yeah. Right. Go.
There's an example of something where he sees something or hears something, it makes it into the Notebook, and then it's starting to fit into different songs.
Yes.
Right. So we have it on tracks 2 and track 3 on this album.
And is it, as I adult me thinks, that it's a tree with garbage bags in the wind in the tree, right? But the version of me that heard this record when it came out, Lizzie and I had tapes of Up to Here on one side and Road Apples on the other side, and we drove all across America and Canada, you know, listening to those songs. But when I was staying at the Golden Rim Motor Inn in 1991, right, or whatever, I thought garbage bag trees were these little trees on the horizon that looked like garbage bags from afar. That's where I went first. And then later I was like, oh, trees that have garbage bags in them. And it's a less attractive vision, right? It's more realistic vision. But my first vision was trees that look like garbage bags. And I've had that one for years. So
I took it a totally different way. Again, that's interesting.
We need that cipher. We need that cipher to get to the bottom of this.
No, we don't.
Who knows? Maybe someday.
I agree. We don't. We don't.
No, we do not.
No, we don't. We don't.
Of course we don't. But if we didn't at least discuss the possibilities, then I would have no
fair. I think the mysteries. I like the mystery better. I always like that. There's an element of mystery that you know. To me, it's not poetry if it's just so literal that there's no room for interpretation.
Oh my gosh,
and
right.
It's maybe more poetic, but if it's so abstract that it's meaningless, that could be a statement that's useful in certain things. But I love stuff that's kind of in between, where it's like, mm-hmm. Poetry to me is like you're coding emotion and experience and your subconscious. You're putting it in code, and it can be, you know, you can decode some or all of it. Maybe, but there's always going to be parts that you can't, for me, there's always going to be stuff in gore that I just cannot decode. And there's other things that came to me years later. I'm like, oh man, I think I know what he's talking about, or at least I know what it means to me now.
And I kind of,
that's what that is. It's poetry.
What do you say, Diddy?
Ambiguity is good.
Yeah. Well, it allows us all to relate in our own ways with our own different life experiences. And then,
yeah.
You get that moment at the Springsteen show where you realize that you and the guy beside you are both crying to Rosalita, and you have your moment.
That's right.
Oh, that was you. Yeah.
Or the one where your first hip show is the one I described. Your second hip show is, well, you bring Livesey with you, and then that's, you look away because of something and miss the part where, tell the beer story really quick. I know we're getting to the end, JD, but.
Yeah, sorry. So the first time I saw the Hip was Under the Rail in Seattle, this little club, and it was one of the greatest shows I ever saw in my life. And it was like right up front in this very intense mosh pit, which engendered some misunderstandings between some Canadian fans who were like kind of hockey dudes and Seattle mosh pit people who were very physical but weren't necessarily trying to start a fight with the mosh pit. It was pretty wild. It was a wild show. It was great. But what I remember was, it was the first time I saw them, and they were all great. I remember checking, like, Rob Baker, oh, that dude can really play. But I remember that Paul Langlois looked like some combination of Keith Richards and Joey Ramone. He had this mop of hair, like, over his eyes, and he never had a cigarette out of his mouth. And he was just, like, playing the shit out of the rhythm guitar. And I just had this vision of, like, oh my God, this guy's a steam locomotive, and he's in the engine room of this band, and he's incredible. But Gord was the one who really got to me. And anyway, Greg is reminding me of this story. There was some dipshit who threw, like, they didn't have glass in this thing, which was smart, but they had these giant, like, big gulp containers of beer you could get. It was really just shy of a quart. And some dumb shit threw one at Gord from, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 feet back. And somehow the thing remained upright and was on a trajectory to hit him right in the chest. And I was like, oh, shit. And he's got the mic. He's holding the mic on the mic stand with his left hand. He sees this thing coming, and he windmills his right arm back and flops back like a scarecrow, and then flops right back and starts singing on the line. Didn't miss a beat. Didn't say, hey, fuck you, who threw that? Didn't even look pissed. He was just like the most graceful, like, zen in the mic stand. His beer grazed his shoulder, didn't spill, and landed behind him. And I saw that, and in that moment, I was like, okay, I know I'm just getting to this guy and these guys, but clearly they have seen it all. They have been on the road. They've been in every tough club in Canada. It was like when little Steven pointed out that by the time Americans saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show in February of 64, they were already halfway through their career. So for that audience, it was like, who are these amazing people who sprung forth yesterday from the head of Zeus, you know? Well, I was like, well, they were 6 years in, man. And that was the feeling I got with the Hip of like, okay, I know I'm new to this, but holy shit, these dudes are for real, and they have already seen it all.
Oh, oops. No.
Lindsay. Liz, sorry. Where'd you go?
I feel like I'm talking a lot, but you guys, like, you pulled a thing on this one, and I'm just, I love this band.
I could listen to you two talk about the Hip forever. I love your Seattle based Tragically Hip.
Let us know when you're in the neighborhood. We'll get you a beer or nine
right after the election.
Okay. All right, folks, we got to wrap this up. So before we do that, I will shuffle for next week's song. Going to do that right now. Hopefully it plays. If it's from Fully Completely, we got to shuffle again.
Thanks, JD, for putting up with us.
Yeah, thank you, JD.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Dave, nice to meet you.
You guys.
Ooh.
Change information.
Nice choice.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, from Trouble at the Hen House, it is
I love that. I love so that song.
Next week on the show. But before we bid everyone adieu, I would be remiss. We've got some talent coming up in the pod list that comes out next week. And we've got some talent around the table here tonight. So I would be remiss if I didn't get some plugs from y'all. Dave, do you want us to kick off?
Dave Kaufman, one on Instagram. Dave.Kaufman, spelled like Andy, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, on Blue Sky. You can Google me and find my National Post article in advance of the 2016 tour that was the most viral thing I've ever written for now. A wonderful article that I'm really proud of at therover.ca about Tragically Hip cover bands and how much I miss the band.
Cool.
Has a lot to do with a Buffalo-based band called the Strictly Hip, who I saw play in a dingy bar in Saranac Lake, New York, a few years ago, and it was one of the wildest nights I've seen post hip. It was a wonderful. It was full of upstate New Yorkers who adored the band, and I can close my eyes right now, picture the crowd singing Cordelia. It was a wonderful night, and inspired me to write about them and to go see them play the Horseshoe Tavern a couple of times. And Jeremy, the lead singer, is a good friend of mine now. I highly endorse them. When they play in a town near you, go see them. But therover.ca, I also profile a Quebecois Tragically Hip cover band in there called the Gracefully Hip, who are based out of Quebec City. They're all Francophones. And I think that's another really cool layer to this, that it's not just English Canada, but there are pockets. And they're playing in Montreal at the Jazz Festival headquarters, the theater inside the Jazz Festival headquarters, next Friday the 15th. And I would be there, except I'm going to Ottawa to see Paul Langlois play.
Nice.
Nice. Oh, wow. Fantastic.
And I think Gracefully Hip are on the pod list. I think they submitted a song for pod list 7.
They are. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So do check that out at therover.ca. So basically, if you Google my name and Tragically Hip, you'll find a bunch of shit.
Chocolate.
Nice. Cool.
Okay.
Cool. I'll be quick, and I was too quick last time, JDS. So I'll take one moment and just say my grandparents had a grocery store in the late 40s and early 50s in Mud Bay, Olympia, Washington, near the Evergreen State College where Livs and I met in 1981. And that grocery store was called Hades Market, and it's got two E's because my grandpa's middle name was D-E-E. So it's a little weird spelling, but you'll see on my handle here on the screen, Hades Market. So that's my band, and Livs plays all over my record, and I'm on at least one of his records, and we started playing. And today somebody was talking about our song about Vanna White, Livs, but that's back in the day. Anyway, so but Hades Market is available on all the streaming thingies, and there we go. That's what it looks like. You got it. You got it. So yes, and then over to you, Master Livesy.
Yes, I am I'm a singer and a songwriter and guitarist with Seattle band Loud Flowers. We just put out 2 3-song EPs named after the studios they were recorded in. We put those out this late last month, and we have a full-length album that came out in 2024, and I think I shamelessly plugged all of this right here in this name tag, but you can find us on Loud, there it is. I love this guy. loudflowers.band is where you can find our website, and we're on all the streams. And prior to that, between 2019 and 2022, I wrote and recorded 3 albums with a band called Seattle Band The Civilians, and had some great players on some of those records. Got to work with Steve Naive from Elvis Costello's band on one track, and so that I really love those records as well. But Loud Flowers is the new project, and yes, Greg and I have been playing music together since 1981, and he's one of the only people I will come to with a song in progress and go, okay, here's what's happening. I really don't do that much.
And then he takes the opposite of whatever advice I give him, which is great.
Yeah, but it's helpful, Greg.
JD. Yeah, I want to say, JD, you're doing yeoman's work, man. Since I've discovered you and this community, I'm reminded of our existence. And it's been a solitary journey for a long time. And living in Montreal is not like living in Toronto. They're not the Beatles here.
Mm.
It's a different vibe. It's sometimes it feels like it's me. And to know that you're out there and that you're doing this work. And I was so sad that I couldn't make it to Toronto for the evening for Sarah J. That looked like just an amazing evening. And community, man. That Gord talked about it on the final tour a lot. He talked It was the other thing that he talked about. He talked about Indigenous rights, but he also talked about community, the gathering of community. He talked about how important that was. Yep. So, thank you, and it's an honor to be a part of this community.
Oh,
yeah, same here, James. Thanks for inviting me into it, JD.
You all have to come back for sure.
Anytime, man.
Thanks for everybody who watched. Thanks for everybody who's gonna watch, and thanks to the panel. From my heart to yours, pick up your shit.
's for listening. This has been a presentation of the Tragically Hip podcast series. For more information and to follow us, visit home.tthpods.com. If you'd like to reach JD, send an email to jd@tthpods.com.
A BetterHelp ad. Therapy isn't just for times of major challenge. It's a valuable tool for anyone wanting to improve their well-being. It can help you develop healthy coping skills, set boundaries, and support personal growth. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a fully licensed therapist right from your phone. No commuting, no waiting rooms. And you can switch therapists at any time. Sign up at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.